hamster with a blunt penknife would do it quicker.
Welcome back to Hamster with a Blunt Penknife, the Doctor Who commentary podcast. Mr. Simon Moore, hello.
Hello again. We're still here.
We're saying hello to each other four times in one day. It's like
one day.
The thing is, these will go out. It will go out every other day. So people will be listening to you for a week and a half.
Or perhaps not.
They will. I've got a question for you before we go into episode three. We talked about the visual nature of the Zygons and how they transferred from the classic series to the new series. What about in storytelling terms? Like, is this a monster for the 70s, or does it transfer quite well into sort of contemporary storytelling?
Look, to be completely fair to the newer stuff with the Zygons only had one outing in the original series, and inevitably when monsters come back, they end up kind of being different, whether it's the Daleks or the Cybermen or the Centaurans. They're always actually a bit different to that first go round. And so if we had have had a second Zygon story in the classic series, I suspect it wouldn't have been as faithful to Terror of the Zygons as I would have liked it to be. Having said that, my main issue with the Zygons, look, the Zygons in this, it's you know, you're in a rural area, you're remote. It's what I was saying sort of in some of the earlier episodes about the sense of isolation you're getting. And I think that's what makes it creepy. And I think that works really well with the Zygons, the fact that they are, you know, they take on human form and so on. And I think giving them a different treatment in the new series is understandable, but it doesn't have the same sort of chilling aspect to it that this brings. It's like they've just done a different monster with the same basic premise, which is understandable and fine. And I won't hold that against them, but yeah, no, it needs to be on a Scottish moor or Sussex moor or whatever the hell it is, to be particularly effective.
I'm not going to ask you to say too much because I want to listen to your Flight for Entirety episode next week and be spoiler free. I'm sure you're going to have lots of things to say, though.
I might.
The one thing that did surprise me was when they turned up in Day of the Doctor in a comedy subplot. And I was like, what's this? This is very different from Terror of the Zygons.
That was for me, that was the disappointing thing. I found them being used as a comedy subplot, as you just described. I think that was very disappointing. For that anniversary story.
And then I
leave it there.
Do think they try and redress that after that, don't they, with the two-parter. And I've heard every opinion from that is my least favourite of the new series to this is exactly what they should be doing. I think that's quite divisive, that two-parter.
The Zygon two-parter?
Really? Yeah.
I didn't know it was divisive. I thought it was, I think it's quite fine. I mean, the worst I would say about it is that it's quite good. You know what I mean? I don't love it, but I certainly don't hate it. It's curious that you're saying that it's a divisive. I think there's many other possible divisive episodes.
I followed Matt Michael's episode a day reviews with some interest. He's a smart cookie who wrote for Doctor Who magazine and could write very concise, very smart reviews in sort of just a paragraph. And yeah, he went to town on the second episode of that Zygon two-parter. Right. I'll send you a link. It's quite an interesting read.
Okay, yeah.
And a quick one at that. It's a paragraph, so, you know.
Oh, is it that damning, is it?
It's pretty damning. Well, look, let's skip into episode three and see just if the Scarisan is going to murder the Doctor. In 3, 2, 1, off we go.
Away we go. Diddly-dum, diddly-dum.
Are you a fan of stop-motion creatures? Have you seen many of the movies Oh, I was brought up on those bits, so and some terrible B movies as well. So I was well adjusted to it before I saw the Scarisan.
No, I think I always preferred like stupid puppets rather than stop motion.
Give me an example of a stupid puppet.
Where to start?
The Bandrels,
for example. Probably not. Not the example I'd probably go to first, but
a very stupid puppet.
Destroy him.
POV shot.
Mm-hmm.
And he says what you want every Doctor Who villain to say: die, Doctor, die.
And again, can I just say, the suckers on the side of Broton's head and I hate to keep using this word, but I will, are moist. Like the ends, the sides of the suckers, there's a moisture to them. They've had Vaseline rubbed on them, on the water it is. And yes, that's a grr, and the Scarison sort of using its claw.
I'm not going anywhere near moist suckers, all right?
Well, I assume they're suckers.
But it is a nice touch.
Oh, just that massaging movement that the Zygon's hands make.
And just as the Brigadier...
It's very sensual.
He had his little mate, didn't he? His soldier mate. Zygon, yes. Proton's got his number two here at the console. The choice of the whispering... I think that was a solid choice.
Exactly.
Oh, no, Dougie. Yes. That's where you don't shoot them. You don't shoot them from below. I can see the wrinkles in the costumes there.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. And you can see the joins between where the boots, little Zygon booties, don't quite match the Zygon trousers.
The trouble is, though, Simon, this stuff was not meant to be examined in the way that we do.
No, I know. But
we love doing it because we have huge affection for it. But
I don't mind. It's like, you know, for goodness sake, you go to the theatre and you see, you know, things. It's not real. You know, it's an impression. And that's what I feel when I'm watching things like this.
You know, sometimes when I'm in the theatre, something visibly goes wrong. How the actors improvise around it is sometimes the most joyous moment of the night.
Exactly. Yeah. When they keep it together, it's fantastic. Oh, look, a ceiling.
A ceiling. You keep your eyes out on subsequent views. Did we have to kill Angus Lenny? He's going to go in this episode. But it does give Sister Lamont a chance.
I just realised he's wearing a cardigan over a jumper. Is that a thing you do?
It's the most Scottish thing you could possibly do, yes.
Right, okay.
It's very cold in the Highlands.
Yeah. She's wearing like a sort of a tweed jacket.
I think instead of just having like an electronic bug, the deer's eyes that move.
Yeah.
That's quite creepy as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's very old school kind of, you know, the eyes in the painting or the eyes on the head thing move of their own accord. It's better than it being just like a red glow. I think that's much more interesting.
But I have seen enough Carry On movies to know that can be extremely comical doing that sort of thing. Yeah.
What, the eyes? Yeah, you're right, actually. It could have looked like we could have all been laughing hysterically at it, but we don't for some reason. Again, it's because Angus Lenny plays it with conviction, you know, the way he's horrified by the... when he's dusting it, you know. Look at that mud.
Yeah, that's Scotland is the one place... Have you spent much time in Scotland?
Not very much, but I have been there.
I know this isn't Scotland, but it's supposed to be. It's the one place in the world I find where the weather's miserable, it's somehow still very beautiful.
Yeah, the ground. Well, that's why I love this kind of foggy, miserable weather as beauty. It's
not something you see very often, is it?
No. We do get a little bit of it in the Snowy Mountains down south here, but not nearly like this. But
whereabouts are you?
No, I'm in Sydney, but in terms of the Snowy Mountains, which is between here and Melbourne, where we do have allegedly ski fields, but there are the topography is not dissimilar in places to that sort of Scottish in places. And when it's bleak, it's bleak, put it that way. I mean, you're elevated sort of somewhat.
Yeah, sometimes I fear the bleakest weather you're ever going to see is a midwinter English day. But
absolutely. Oh, absolutely. It's fantastic. I love that.
Well, it's perfect for this sort of horror.
Exactly. Exactly. I think it's why the weather is. I love the weather in Britain. Forgall Castle. Now, that is a painting or no.
But it's another great set, this.
Oh, yes. But again, that's a set that they'd have been able to just wheel out of their store because they have castles in stock.
They're doing period dramas every other day. You know?
Exactly.
Oh, this is great. My family have served this country for seven centuries, centuries. That seems not to count these days. And the fact that he's there in the doorway, he doesn't care. He's like, oh, hi.
Yes, exactly. Oh, hi. Hello. Brilliant.
And I do think the way Woodnut differentiates the Duke and Broson and the Duke as Broson, it's three very different characters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's thought about it. Someone's thought about it, and that's brilliant. Yes. Tell him.
A few more times to take the piss out of the Brigadier before he exits stage left.
Exit stage left, yes.
Don't tell me you found the monster.
Tell you found the monster, yes. It's so serious.
And weird enough, that's where Bob Banks Stewart said this started, that he wanted to tell the Loch Ness Monster myth. But I don't really think that's the focus of the story.
No.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah. And there it is. Maybe because it's a subtle movement, and then you get to cut to that close up, pretty much almost front on of Angus.
And it's like you've said a couple of times, there's nothing particularly sophisticated about how he just shot that. It's just done with conviction.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the key.
It's the well-placedness. Yeah, it's also the right choices. It's not doing anything flashy. It's just making the right choices at the right time. And that's why. Whereas, I mean, even when Canfield's doing a Hartnell, you know, under the incredible restraints that they must have had there, look at the direction of Dalek Master Plan 2 and how tight that is compared to the just kind of the laziness of the direction of something like The Chase in comparison. And there is no excuse for why The Chase should look like that, whereas Dalek Master Plan 2 looks like the way it does. It's getting the actors to hit their mark. It's using sensible shots within the studio that doesn't reveal too much of the set that you don't want to reveal. Yeah, anyway.
The shot I always think of is, sorry, away from Terror of the Zygons, never mind.
Yeah.
Is in The Crusade, where he pulls back from Barbara talking, goes behind the curtain where Bernard Kay is in the shadow, sort of silhouetted. Yep. It's in beautiful. Episode 1.
Absolutely.
And then you get the Web Planet next week and you're like, oh dear, what's happened?
Yeah. Well, actually, the direction of Web Planet is not as disastrous as it might be, but it's the chase is the one that I always go to, is the fact that they just don't care at that point. Like it's shoddily. That's one of the reasons I don't like that story, is that it's just shoddily made, even by the standards of then. And here he is.
Oh, gosh, here she comes, Sister Lamont.
Yes.
It's been a while since we've seen you.
Yes.
So he's got that nice familiarity with her, because obviously he knows her, and then she dirts. But I don't think there's anything wildly out of character. She's not sort of playing total evil, is she? She's playing the stern nurse.
Yeah, yeah. Although not uncompassionate. And certainly when you see her later as the real Sister Lamont, she is actually relatively compassionate.
Mm.
Like she has a softer, she plays it a bit softer.
And we get a scene with the real Duke at the end, don't we, as well?
Yeah.
And that's the same.
Yeah. All I remember is him saying, "That's right, I am." I think that's one of his very few lines.
The line I always remember is when he goes, "But that's the TARDIS, doesn't it?" How the hell do you know that? Here we go, Benson.
And then the lovely sting that you get when it cuts up to the, and the great thing is you see it in long shot, and then you see the close up with the eyes missing, and yeah, just great. Oh, and here we are, everyone's favorite. And look at the dead leaves on the ground, and it's just so evocative, and the sound, and even the fact that you get the sound of the leaves crunching underfoot, it's just so, you get a sense of the temperature.
That's basically up the road right now.
Right, yeah. I love those autumn forests like that.
It's and the so Zygon amazing. Going through the trees there. Just sort of, you catch a glimpse of it.
Yep, absolutely. You're like,
what is that? Well, we know what that is.
Yep.
Do you know,
gunfire.
With Canfield back, because he's not been directing the show since Inferno, so it's been a long old gap. And I think in that time UNIT did become familiar, the action did get a bit cartoony, it got very safe. I feel like he's come back and gone, no, let's do this for real again.
Absolutely, yeah,
which is nice. It's nice as they're bowing out that I hate using that word gritty, but
well, yeah, I mean, it's obviously not gritty in actually gritty, because it's, you know, Doctor Who, but it, comparatively speaking, it's gritty. But that shot of Benton that we had then before, I think the director also sets the tone of what's expected of the actors in terms of the level of their performance.
Yeah.
And I think Canfield is one. I mean, I heard he was a bit of a bastard and you know, ran the whole thing like a military operation. But you can really see, like, everyone is absolutely behaving their best.
I know that Levine said that he always gave him extra time when they worked together. He loved working with Canfield because, you know, he would say, "We're going to make you look like a soldier this week, John."
Yeah. Yeah, and he did just then when he was walking up, you know, just that as he was moving into the sort of slightly tighter shot and looking up there, he really looked like a soldier looking for a fugitive.
In fact, I think you are right in that he ran it sort of very military. Graham Harper was his second, and he said, you know, it was absolutely, they had those specific roles. Liz Sladen says in an autobiography about this story that they all loved working for Canfield and they weren't going to get all the work done. They had to come in at the weekend for free. They weren't going to be paid for it because it was the BBC and they weren't going to give me extra money. And Douglas Canfield said, oh, please, look, let's do it. Let's make this as good as we can possibly make it. And they all came in and worked. They had a buffet. They had a grand old time. So I think you're right. He set
was
the tone.
Was that rehearsals or is that like they had extra filming time?
Shooting. It was while shooting. Yeah, he wanted to do extra bits and bobs to make this as good as it could be. And they all came in for him. All the technicians, all the actors.
Mm. That's pretty good. I mean, that's what you want. You want people going the extra mile because that's what it's about.
Simon, this scene.
Oh, here we go. It's just a scratch.
I'm 7 years old again.
I think this scared is not the right. You asked about me being scared before. I was never scared, but I think I was a bit freaked out. And I think this is something that was very evocative. And I think I was freaked out. And that blood down here.
Yeah, I want to say it's the sort of shock of the blood, but I think it was her eyes that got me more than anything.
It's her eyes. It's the fact that she's so completely calm, even though she's got all this blood coming off her. And it's just a scratch. No, it's just not important.
Yeah.
And then the
right. And now look at her eyes now.
Yes.
That's how you do it.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. No one saw me. I'm just going, brilliant.
And did you see the economy of that? Then you cut to the brigadier, the nursing sister.
Yeah. Mm.
Great. Mm. The story can move on.
Yeah. Oh, we're seeing him again dead. They haven't moved his body away or put a blanket over it yet.
There is always something a bit more grisly about someone dying with their eyes open as well.
Oh, yes. See, I don't know whether... The Duke, yes.
Yeah, I do wonder if they should have made this connection a little earlier, but...
Yes.
Great Scott, he says. Scott. like he's Scott. In a bloody cartoon.
Yes. I mean, he may have been cold and kind of a bit nasty, but, you know, he's a member of the aristocracy. That's probably just what they expected. So.
Oh, I remember loving all of this. Her poking her tongue out, blowing the dust in a minute. All of this.
Yes.
I feel like the odds collapse with Doctor Who because the way that she grabs the one book that opens the door into the spaceship.
Yeah, I don't care. Look, you know, maybe she's the one that the only one that's not dusty because it's been, you know, fingered.
Oh, well done. Well
pretty
done.
Good, Your Grace. Oh, look at that. Awesome.
It's a nickname. He's a Highland Games champion. It's very Gaelic. She's so charming, isn't she?
Just awesome.
I almost wish she'd got to play evil, but of course we get that in Hand of Fear, don't we?
We get that in Hand of Fear, and we get that a little bit when she's Android Sarah in Android version.
Oh, and when she's Androvax in the Sarah Jane Adventures. I mean, she chews the scenery in that one. Oh, that's fabulous. But Barry Letts said, when casting Elizabeth Sladen and Tom Baker, that he wanted actors that would command the screen, even if nothing particularly exciting is going on. I think you've got a great example of that here.
Absolutely. Because she does business as well.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, she does. Oh, okay. No, she does. She's pulling it. Okay. That's right. I forgot.
I think she's always aware of her place within the scene, you know, and she's always contributing something, even if she's silent.
Yeah. Without upstaging. Like she won't upstage when she's just in the background or something. Like in a sequence like this, she's playing it properly. Like, again, it's.
But skipping ahead to the 80s, just for a second, think about some of those long shots in stories like Time Flight, where you've got them all standing in a row and poor Sarah Sutton and Janet Fielden don't have a clue what they're doing in the scene. They're just sort of standing there waiting to say their lines. Yeah. There is a skill to saying nothing.
Absolutely. No, 100%. But I mean, Time Flight's got a whole lot of other problems. And again, it's an example of the director shooting the set and the props as if they are perfect. And so, and yet they're not. Do you know what I mean? They've got to understand.
Who do you imagine celebrated that story for this podcast? It's one of the FTE boys.
Celebrated? Brendan?
It was Brendan. Yes.
And he did a fine job, I've got to say.
Well, look, I haven't actually looked. It's the only one of the season 19 Blu-ray box set that I haven't watched yet. I've got to get around to watching it. But, I mean, look, admittedly, when I first saw it in 1982, I don't recall it being terrible. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you're that age, when I'm 10 years old, I'm not thinking, oh, God, this is so terrible compared to what we just saw in Earthshock last week. It's something that I think we learn to discern. But it is terrible.
I mean, this is great business with the door. Yeah.
Yes.
It reminds me a little bit of
boring.
Roy Castle in the Dalek movie. Do you remember when he's sitting that step and then going in and out of the door?
Yeah. But yes, she's just walking through corridors like Barbara is at the end of Daleks Part 1. And in both instances, it's not uninteresting. Partly because the actress is doing their bit to make sure it's not boring.
And can I tell you
chewing the scenery?
What I think is the best ever Sarah and Harry dialogue exchange. Harry, is it you? What do you mean, is it me? Is it really you? I love it.
Open the door. Yes. Yes. The way she works it out. Oh, dear. And there she is.
And, you know, we do have similar spaceship sets in the Android Invasion, but again, it is how you shoot them, it's how you light them.
But I think they're shot and lit just as, not quite as well, but almost as well as in this. Who directs Android Invasion?
It's Barry Letts.
Oh, okay. Who is competent.
Mm.
It is a little more lit than this, but it's still got, everyone's still taking it seriously. It's played with conviction and so on and so on.
Trouble is, you've got the Zygons in this and the Kralls in that.
Yeah, I'm getting the Kralls. I like the Kralls. Especially Chadaki.
It just reminds me of Zippy. Oh, here we go. Is it you?
I just realised Harry's wearing the same outfit for the entirety of his era. He's wearing the same blazer and the same blue shirt.
He's preceding season 19.
Yes. There's an act. He's Harry as action figure.
But because like, so the stories
managed to change,
run into each other. It's been quite a short period of time, hasn't it?
No, it has. One can imagine that. I mean, even Genesis of the Daleks would only take place over the course of a week, max a week, and you know, Ark in Space a couple of days. You know, Centurion spread a couple of days. This couple of days. Yeah, I mean, basically, he's only from robot to this. He's probably only. It's only the whole thing's taken about 2.5-3 weeks max.
In the 10 years time ago, I had these strange couple of weeks, you know, in my 30s.
Exactly.
He completely lost his mind, and that's why he's creating that genocidal potion in the Zygon two-parter in the future.
Yes. The place is deserted.
Blood.
I still love that outfit. Such a brilliant...
What, Tom's?
Jumpsuit. No, well, yes, but Sarah's. That I love that. It's a very understated outfit. But also, I like Tom's shorter season 12 red jacket or burgundy jacket, whatever you want to call it.
I love the fact that he screams the way he does in a minute. Tom shows sort of pain and fear in a way that later Tom never does.
No, exactly. He says, I don't do that anymore.
But that's a scream that rivals the best female screams we've seen in the series.
Absolutely. Ooh. Yes. What's this happened? Oh, here we go.
Make one move and the doctor dies.
Devil are they?
That's such a British. What the devil are they?
Are they? Brilliant.
You want Broton to say, that's rude. Wait. the rulers of yours. So it is an invasion then.
Again, we're not seeing too much. I mean, occasionally we do it, but on the whole, we're not seeing much of the Zygons beyond those nice close-ups of the face. Mm. So any deficiencies in the joins of the costume are hidden, or at least are not overly exposed. And the fact that they're like, you know, like all aliens, they're wandering around nude.
You almost want like the directors, all the directors that are working on a particular period of the show to have a conference and go, right, this is how you do the monsters. Let's have some uniformity in how we shoot these things.
Well, one could argue that that's what the producer's for, isn't he?
Well, yes. Yes. I don't think you like bringing any of them together.
But as a whole, well, I mean, they don't have time. There's just no time to do that. But I mean, Hinchcliffe is doing that. Hinchcliffe is hiring the right directors to set the right tone. And you know, the setting of the tone comes from the top. And Tom's behaving himself, and everyone's behaving themselves.
I remember watching this scene as a kid and not having a clue why they were setting off explosions in that water. I was totally baffled.
Yeah, I remember that being a bit, what are they doing? I don't understand this.
But the fact that they go with the model work for the cliffhanger and it isn't a disappointment, bravo.
No, it is. It is probably the most impressive model, certainly of the 70s. It looks so good. I mean, is that a match shot with the, no. Is something looking funky about the water there, the lake? With the grass and the behind it, I don't know whether there's some kind of match. No, that doesn't make sense with the explosion, but well, maybe. But yeah, that is a great model. I mean, look at that.
The underwater stuff's great as well.
And they've shot it like at 1/10 speed or whatever the hell it is to give it a sense of scale rather than making it look like it's only as big as your hand. It actually looks like it's big.
I was convinced that was underwater. You know, even though it's just surrounded by dry ice.
Yeah.
I was a simple kid, you know.
Oh, it's not. It's actually just dry ice around.
Yeah, no, it's not underwater. No,
that's
yeah,
how they did the effect. Oh, okay. It's just. I had no idea.
And good lighting again. A nice judicious use of sound again as well.
And look, yes, you see the slow motion, just of the water falling off the model making.
And I've got a feeling Dudley would have gone in big, whereas he doesn't, does he? It's again, it's kind of haunting.
I mean, Jeffrey Bergen is a. I mean, Dudley is a, you know, great jobbing composer, but Jeffrey Bergen is the one that goes on to do significant work.
And you know what the madness is? Hinchcliffe needed convincing because he was absolutely assured that Dudley Simpson should be scoring everything, and Canfield had to give him like samples to convince him to use him because he was like, I don't think it's going to work in Doctor Who. It's very melodramatic.
It's interesting because I mean, back in the day, the received wisdom was that Canfield and Dudley had this massive falling out way back in the Crusade because that was the only story that they ever did together, and then Dudley never scored one of Canfield's stories since. I think that was I believe that was people putting two and two together and making five, but nevertheless, there is something about it, the fact that he does insist on not using Dudley for this and for Seeds of Doom. And that's the only two. Is that the only two that Dudley doesn't do in the Hinchcliffe era? Oh no, that's right. No, the
Revenge of the Cybermen. Yeah,
Revenge of the Cybermen. Yes, which again has this wonderful unique sound to it. But yeah, yes.
Yeah. Again, that's music I heard in my childhood that people can tell me is terrible, and I still think it's glorious. Just
Revenge
like
of the Cybermen music
and Death to the Daleks as well. I love it.
Yeah, completely wrong. The London Saxophone Quartet rule.